Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com for details. Today we have a great show in store for you. So hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jimmy and I are excited to be with you once again. Now, today's topics include Herman Cain's alleged sexual harassment charges. Now, whatever happened to being innocent until proven guilty? And who is that woman behind the man? Gloria Cain takes center stage. And, of course, Occupy Wall Street is beginning to get a little brutal. We'll talk a little bit about that. And if you haven't heard, Andy Rooney dies. Also, I need a new phone. What type of phone should I get? What are the best plans on the market? I want to hear from you. I really need a phone. That BlackBerry is passe, if you will. We will also get an update on Oprah's Life Class with our executive producer, Jima. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And also, I have a chat room open, so come on out there and join us. So whatever way, whatever fashion, you know, choose your weapon. Come on in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, before we get started today, I want to give a big shout out to the good people over at PushGapRadio.com. So go check them out right now. Everywhere out there, all over the world, go out and check out PushGapRadios.com. That's P-U-S-H-G-A-P, radios, plural, .com. I had an amazing time in their studio a couple of days ago. They are truly a dynamic group of people. And I tell you, you heard it first right here on Current Events with Patrick Cook. You will be hearing a lot more about that group. They are truly amazing. Secondly, I want to send out my condolences to the Andy Rooney's family. Now, of course, if you haven't heard, he died Friday night, according to CBS, and only a month after delivering his 1,097th and final televised commentary. Now, Rooney had gone to the hospital for an undisclosed surgery, but major complications developed and he never recovered. He was truly an icon, and I enjoyed listening to his commentary, of course, on 60 Minutes. Now, so up first, I want to talk a little bit about Herman Cain. Yes, that's right. The father of the 999 plan. Now, the Associated Press reported Wednesday that a third woman experienced behavior by Cain that made her uncomfortable and considered filing a complaint, but ultimately did not. Now, of course, this is in addition to the former National Restaurant Association employee that already had accused, that was allegedly accused him of sexual harassment in Arlington, Virginia in the 1990s. Now, Politico has learned that one of the women who accused Herman Cain of a sexual harassment at the National Restaurant Association in the mid-1990s received a payout of about $45,000 as a part of her settlement, significantly more than the 2 or 3 months salary Cain initially recalled that woman attained. Now, what's interesting to me is a couple of things. First, I want to know why the media has been so quick to convict Herman Cain on these trumped-up allegations. Whatever happened to being innocent until proven guilty? Now, we all know when it comes to big business, people always try to pay their way out of these situations when there are some accusations that come out. So why are we so quick to judge him? Now, how would this case change if we knew the race, color, or the physical makeup of these women? How would the media cover this? Now, what do you make of the fact that he was able to raise more money and get a slight tick up in the polls shortly after the scandal broke? I also looked at this as another teachable moment on the subject of sexual harassment. It is a label that can destroy a person's career. Look at what happened in the Strauss-Kahn's case. Now, although this case was about sexual assault, the case against Dominic Strauss-Kahn is basically collapsed when the investigators uncovered major holes in the credibility of the housekeeper who charged him. But nevertheless, the initial week that when it all broke, it destroyed this man's career and, of course, ultimately his reputation. So, you know, although this thing is going on with Herman Cain, I would like to get your comments on this because I want to kind of see where you are, A, on Herman Cain, and B, on these issues that he's been, quote-unquote, allegedly charged with. So after the break, we're going to talk about this. And, of course, we're going to have my good friend Jima to weigh in on any and all of these issues. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We will be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, of course, I want to talk about the father of the 999 plan. He's up first. And we're going to open up the phone lines here in just a minute. But before we do that, I would like to Jima to weigh in. Jima, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
Now, of course, Jima is the executive producer of the Current Events blog. She's actually the sole author of TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com, and it is always a pleasure to have her join me because she has this wealth of knowledge on these issues, and so I'm so excited to have her on the show. So, Jima, let me begin by asking you about the father of the 999 tax plan. Now, this guy, the media has been quick to convict Herman Cain in these sexual allegations. What's going on with Herman Cain here?
Are you serious? You gotta play that in the background of that question?
Yeah,
really?
Why not?
Wow, what's going on with the allegations with Herman Cain? I think it initially was because Herman Cain did not give a very good answer the first time out the gate when he was asked about the allegations. And so instead of trying to act as though he did not have a clue as to what anybody was talking about, he should have just been forthcoming and saying, you know what, that happened a while ago, and I will have to do some research and find out what exactly you're talking about, and, you know, somebody would speak on behalf of the campaign or something. But to just come out and blatantly say, it never happened, he don't know what anybody's talking about, and then to come up with all these excuses, he blamed it on Rick Perry. Well, first he blamed it on the liberal media, then he blamed it on Rick Perry, and then Rick Perry's people blamed it on Mitt Romney. Are you serious? This is what our presidential campaign has come to. It's such a sad state, such a sad state.
But, you know, I mean, they always come out and attack front runners like this, right?
Of course, I'm not denying that in the polls he's showing that he's a front runner. I'm not going to argue that point with you. The facts are there. He's still making, and matter of fact, I think he's made more money this past week than he's made since he's been running, which says a lot about people that are wanting to donate to his campaign. They don't want somebody that knows anything. They want somebody that they think they can, that they have something in common with. I don't understand it, but.
So what do you make of the fact that he was able to raise more money and get a slight uptick in the polls shortly after the scandal broke? Because obviously, the last couple of weeks or months, they were reporting that he hasn't raised that much money, but all of a sudden, he's getting his money pouring into him. What do you make of this?
I count it to the marketing of his connection with his adopted brothers, the Koch brothers, and their ability to manipulate the media and their ability to show it to be one thing when it's not. They were very successful at making this be about everybody but Herman Cain, making it be like Herman Cain was a victim. And when you can splice together, you know, different pieces of information from Harry Belafonte and Reverend Al Sharpton, and then splice it with what Clarence Thomas said back during his Senate confirmation hearing. You know, it's a wonderful media marketing strategy. I can't fault them for that. It's unfortunate that people are not aware of what's going on and that they are allowing themselves to be manipulated and to even be thinking not even thinking in their own best interest.
Yeah, I have
that's
to
what I can't understand.
So how would you? Go ahead.
You go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you, how would the case change if we knew the race, color, or physical makeup of the women? I mean, obviously, they're under this contract where they can't really come out and say anything, although there's reports now that he's violated this particular contract. But for the most part, we haven't heard from any of them. And the media has been really adamant about trying to get them to come out.
Well, you heard a statement from one of them through her attorney. And he did, you know, say she did not want to come out forward for fear of reprisal, for, you know, having to relive everything that happened. So this was her attorney speaking her words and what she said and felt about the incident. And even so on to say that it was not just one incident, but it was several times in which he was allegedly acting inappropriate towards her sexually. So I think, you know, if we, I don't know, I think, let me change that. I think it will have an impact on how media will cover it, depending on the color and the race or how the women are made up, so to speak, whether or not they fit the glamour girl or they're the, you know, the dopey secretary next door look. I think that will have a part to play in it. But what strikes me even more, or what probably not, but what upsets me even more, and I think I said this a couple of weeks ago about the marginalization we've allowed people to get away with when they use the term slavery and things around slavery. The whole notion of lynching and how it was just spewed out across the airwaves like it was a term of endearment. And the misuse of the word was very troublesome to me. And that from what I know about lynchings you do not survive. Lynchings is something fatal and deadly and finite. It's over. You don't survive being lynched. So for Herman Cain to equate this event as some sort of lynching was appalling to me when I think about all the people that have been lost because of lynching. You don't. That's not something you use lightly. For me, I felt like it was in poor taste. I think the media grabbed onto it, and that made it even worse, in my opinion. I think when they spliced it in, when Clarence Thomas said it 20-some years ago, I thought it was. I didn't think it was appropriate when he said it. And so I just feel like we've got to do a better job of educating. And I think it was Karen Hunter who said it best that, you know, maybe now we can begin to have real conversations about what is sexual harassment, what is the true definition, so that, you know, you can't be on television saying, well, if he just told a girl she looked attractive, then that's not harassment. But if, you know, but if I'm on the receiving end of that and I did not like the way he said it or I did not like the way he looked at me, how dare you tell me what I can't call it based on what the rules are, you know, in our organization. And so you have people now that even though they haven't seen these alleged victims, they're wanting to discount their story because it's you know, it could have been anything. Well, whatever it was enough for them to file a complaint, to take it all the way to the top, and to get a settlement. So, you know, yes, I know corporations do these things all the time and try to cover these things up all the time, but at the end of the day, they got a settlement, and can't nobody talk about it.
Well, yeah, that's true. And so that's why I think it's kind of interesting to know that in that clause that they can't talk about it, and the fact that we will never get a true understanding of all the details that went into it. And the reason why I bring that up, because I said earlier, should we take a look at this as another opportunity for a teachable moment? You know, over the President's Obama's term, we've had these pockets of what they call teachable moments. And here's another opportunity to talk about sexual harassment. You know, because it's a label that can destroy a person's career. Now, although we don't know the details that went into the investigation, I mean, you mentioned the fact that, you know, they got paid and there's a settlement, but people do that all the time. I mean, there are plenty of gold diggers out there that go after people of power, a set of double standard when it comes to certain things, and to be able to, and to get, you know, to come up, basically, based on they're trying to be greedy. And so I go over this the example with the case against Dominic Strauss-Kahn, right? And I talked about the fact that the maid, basically the case against him collapsed when the investigators uncovered major holes in the credibility of the housekeeper. So, I mean, it's a thin line. We can't really move too quickly to judge these people when they do come up with these allegations, but at the same time, we need to take them seriously.
Correct, but I think the difference here is that this goes back to the 90s, and there's already been an investigation, and that investigation showed enough for them to say, okay, here's what we would do but to make this go away so that you don't say anything else about it ever, or whatever the terms of the agreement were, or the settlement, whatever those terms were, there was some sort of investigation done. So it's not as blanket and clear as Dominic Strauss-Kahn, because, you know, once they began to investigate, they realized they didn't have a case. This was separate in that they did investigate, allegedly, and found something for them to settle with at least two women, and for $35,000 for one and $45,000 for another one, and they were able, you know, to go on, you know, with their lives or whatever. Hashtag Carmen Kane. It's not as though either one of these cases has deterred his career any, obviously.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about another case that's near and dear to all our hearts. That's the Michael Jackson case. He also paid out, and you know, with the situation that he went was allegedly charged with. And when we return, we're going to talk about that. Is there a correlation here? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your comments and questions. In the meantime, Jima, now we're talking about how people are quick to judge Herman Cain. He pretty much crucified him. Now, although he didn't take a big hit as far as the polls are concerned, of course, even when it comes to raising money, because he's picked up a lot of money. But I would like to know if the Michael Jackson case, when he paid out, what was the reaction for most people when it comes to his guilt? Do you think most people crucify him as well?
Of course they did, but I think this is two separate instances, though. I think Michael Jackson, in the first case, was someone who listened to his lawyers and team of people and said, just go ahead on and pay people so it'll go away. And when he refused to pay, then that last time when he decided he was going to go ahead and go to trial, I think you saw a different set of responses from people in terms of whether or not he was guilty or innocent. Now, the thing with Herman Cain is that neither of these people actually went after him personally. They all, made their, they followed their personnel rules, I would presume,
and went and followed their chain of command up to through the Restaurant Association. So I think the difference there is that they did follow protocol. They did follow procedure and, you know, formed a complaint and, filed a complaint, went through the process, went through the proper channels, and then followed it all up until they got to, you know, whatever they thought they needed out of the deal. So I think that's a little different. Now, I think with Herman Cain, I just want to say this, in terms of his guilt or innocence, I'm really not as concerned about his guilt or his innocence as I am about his inability to be straightforward with the American people when questioned about this. There were several different ways he could have handled it, and, of course, his first thing out the gate was to blame the media, the liberal media. So, of course, those that have a bias toward the liberal media will continue to support him and donate, which is probably what happened on Tuesday and Wednesday. But as the story began to unfold and people began to hear other stories and or, you know, allegedly other victims, then things wasn't so pretty for Ms. Cain. So I think that initial wave of support was just wave of support because you're my friend or, you know, I like you. But then after I found out a little more information, I might not be so forthright in public, you know, to stand up and support you. What I do find odd is that the hint of impropriety has not caused all of the turmoil as it did back when President Obama was running for office. And it's just amazing to me how soon we forget how one person was treated, and we look at this and it's all about, you know, that nobody likes me, or you can tell I'm the front runner. And even Herman Cain would upset me even more. I mean, he just upset me so many times. But, you know, for a man that 2 weeks ago stated racism doesn't exist in this country anymore, to now saying this week that it was racist, you know, the liberal media was racist for bringing this up. I mean, really? And Politico is not a left-wing type of organization. From my readings, it's really pretty in the middle or right. So it couldn't be that coming from Politico.
Well, what I hear you saying then is there's obviously a credibility problem with Herman Cain, i.e. he says one thing and then he comes back and contradicts himself later. So is that something that should be important in a presidential candidate? Should he be truthful and honest and open? I mean, because politicians lie all the time. Let's be honest.
Yeah, they do not tell the truth all the time, but when it's something that can be proven like this, I mean, you know, they come on their platform and they say what they're going to do and they get in office and they don't do half of what they do, that's one thing. But when it can be proved that you have done something that's been, you know, considered to be not necessarily a crime, but, you know, questionable judgment, you need to go ahead and own up to it on the front end. You got to remember, the majority of Americans are forgiving people when you tell the truth up front. You look at what happened to Anthony Weiner, Representative Weiner out of New York, and all the pundits and even, you know, your regular lay people were saying, if he had just said this in the beginning, nobody would have been calling for his resignation. This man didn't even do that, but sent some pictures of his private part on Twitter, and he had to resign from his position in the House of Representatives. And you mean to tell me that Herman Cain allegedly has been accused in several sexual harassment cases, and we still want him to run for president of these United States of America? I don't think so. That's unacceptable.
What do you make of Lawrence O'Donnell's plea to have the women come out and talk?
I think Lawrence O'Donnell was a little bit over the edge of that night when he made that plea to the people. It really is not up to the women as much as it is up to the National Restaurant Association to waive the stipulation that they can't talk about it. So until the Restaurant Association waives it, then those ladies are really bound by that agreement and then we don't know what happens if they do, if they got to give the money back, if they'll be charged with something. I mean, we don't know what's all, you know, in that agreement that would potentially hold them back from saying anything. So but I, you know, I would love to hear from one of them, but, you know, hearing through one of their attorneys is stating, you know, what happened, and she was pretty, you know, based on the statement, she was pretty clear that it wasn't just an isolated event.
Okay. So I want to shift gears here in just a minute. So we have a few more seconds before we close up this segment of the show. Over the past couple of weeks now, we know that the media, when I say the media, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC, when they covered Herman Cain, they kind of dismissed him, or they were very dismissive when they talked about him. So I wonder now, with this uptick in the polls, will they begin to take him more seriously? And do you think, Jima, that he has a chance of getting the GOP nomination?
Well, I think they started taking him seriously when he won whatever straw poll, not won, but came in wherever, when he started, you know, in the straw polls. I think also at some of his performances at some of the debates, people began to take a different look at him, which is also why now all of a sudden, you know, there was a little bit more critique of his 999 plan at that last debate that they had. Because people was like, well, wait a minute, dude, if somebody out here really wants you to be president, we need to do a little bit more vetting of you and checking out what you're talking about. So they've begun to do their due diligence, which they should have been doing anyway. So, you know, now they've began to do that with him, which is fair. I mean, they do it to everybody. So he's not getting any treatment in terms of how the media is looking into his life than any other candidate has ever gotten. It's amazing that it took them so long to do it, but this is par for the course when you're running for president of the United States.
Is it possible that he would be able to get the GOP nomination?
No, in this climate and what we're dealing with, anything is possible on the GOP side. They are so not happy with their candidates. They have this notion that a business person, quote unquote, would be better for us than a person that knows anything about domestic policy or foreign policy. Why they feel that way, I have no earthly idea. I don't think they really understand the impact that his quote unquote 999 or 909 plan would have on their lives, what his thoughts are on Social Security, what his thoughts are on Medicare, and how his whole goal is to privatize those things, and how that will have a direct impact on a large group of people. I don't think they are really paying attention to what he's saying. They're caught up into the rhythm of his voice and the song that comes at the end. And so he's swayed by their emotions, but I don't think they're really paying attention to who he is and what he stands for.
I find it pretty interesting to see that that he has been able to successfully move his way through, navigate his way through a GOP political party that has been strongly dominated by white males, and the fact that, you know, he's had some success in his private life, you know, with respect to being the CEO and all of the things that he's done with motivational speaking. He's still around. He's still hanging around. So although when I look at the presidential President Obama's campaign and things he's doing as far as getting ready for the 2012 fight, basically, he's focusing all of his attention on Mitt Romney as opposed to Herman Cain or any other candidate. So I wonder, as we get closer and closer to Iowa, the Iowa caucuses, if Herman Cain wins the Iowa caucuses, do you think President Obama will begin to shift his attention towards Herman Cain?
Because I trust my president, and I listen to him, and I watch him, I don't think he's not focused on Herman Cain right now. I would guarantee you that at the moment it is deemed and identified who the real front runner is and who is probably really going to get the nomination, whether it's Cain, Perry, or whoever it is. I guarantee you the president has people looking at all of them, simply because he knows as much as just as we do that this thing could go to anybody depending on who show up at the polls. And so because of that, I don't think he's going to just sit around twiddling his thumbs and put all his eggs in the basket with Mitt Romney. I really believe that there might be another silent team. You know, you can't show everybody your hand. So the easy hand to show is the Mitt Romney hand, right? Because that's what everybody expects you to do. And that's the word coming out of Washington, is that that's who they're most, you know, afraid of, is Mitt Romney. And I don't believe that either, but that's just how they want to put it out there. But to go back to Herman Cain for 1 second, another thing that happened this week also was around the allegations around his campaign funds and how there may have been some misappropriation of funds coming from a nonprofit organization buying certain things for his campaign staff and things of that nature. So that might have a negative impact toward the end of the week, as it showed toward the end of the week as well.
You know, people ask me this all the time, and I say that there is no way possible that Herman Cain could split the black vote. But I would love to get you to weigh in, Jim, on this. If again, I'm going to go with these hypotheticals. If Herman Cain gets the GOP nomination, is it possible that he split the black vote?
No. He will get whatever that percentage of black people that are conservative or Republican that was not going to vote for the president anyway. So he's not going to get that vote. Now, he might garner some independent voters, but he won't have an impact because of some of the statements that he's made that has been contradictory and almost not contradictory, but almost a slap in the face of the history of black people in America. To discount the civil rights movement as something that you couldn't participate in because you was in school, when we know that the majority of those that were participating in that process were students. So, you know, how can you say that? To talk about you not having a job and it's your own fault, when we know a lot of people are unemployed not by any fault of their own. To basically, you know, so he's going to lose that portion of voters that are elder because he is basically trampling on the lives of those that they know and whose lives was lost during that period. So he's not going to get those people to vote. Now, there are some that really believe that he is the second coming for the Republican Party, and he is the great answer to, you know, President Obama, and, you know, what a great thing it would be to have these two men of color debating one another and you know, really showing that the Republican Party is not the party of races and all of those things, which, you know, I wouldn't call the whole party that, but there are certain factions of that party that represents that. So, you know, if he was to get the nomination, I think President Obama would be ready for him and would be ready to dole out whatever commercials he needed to dole out. And let's not forget, you talked about Herman Cain being able to stay around. He got some long money attached to him when you talk about the Koch brothers. So let's not play like he's not connected. You know, when he can stand up in front of a group of people and say, I'm their brother from another mother, you know, that's some pretty tight relationships right there. You don't just say that about anybody. So one has to recognize that Herman Cain is connected, and he might be in the race for the long haul simply because of who's putting out the money.
So last question on Herman Cain. Do you think he's a real viable threat that could potentially threaten the presidential candidate Barack Obama?
No.
Why not?
Well, his platform is to, I mean, there's nothing he's saying that will resonate with a general population. It resonates with his base. It resonates with the far wing of people. But when you get to the center, which is where most of America sits, most of America sit in the center, he's not going to resonate with most of America. So, you know, he'll do well in the primaries, maybe, you know, depending on how all things fall out. But I don't consider him to be a major threat to President Obama. I really don't consider any of them to be a major threat. I mean, he may not win by a landslide like he did initially, but I don't doubt that he's going to win.
That's good. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I want to talk about the violence that's been taking place on Occupy Wall Street. Just recently, we've had it even erupt here in Dallas. You know, you may have heard of what happened in Oakland a couple of weeks ago, but it is starting to take hold. Why is so many people or the actual police officers starting to fight the people on Wall Street? I'm going to take your comments when we get back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Point friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. Now, I want to shift gears for a minute from the Herman Cain debacle or debate to another thing that's happening, and I'm kind of taken back by this. Because of the violence that's taking place on Occupy Wall Street. Now, of course, here a couple of days ago, they actually had some people beaten by the police down here in Dallas. And, of course, they did the same thing happen in Oakland. So, Jim, I wanted you to weigh in. What's going on? Why is this taking all of a sudden a more violent turn?
I think it is par for the course. Whenever you have a group of people who have rallied around something bigger than ourselves, and we don't quite know how to handle it. So I think law enforcement and its duty to make things safe may sometimes be a little overzealous in how they respond to people. And let's remember that everybody has not gone to the class on how to interact with police officers. So you have some that are going to react the way they've seen on television, or react the way they think they should in order to maintain their personhood, woman or manhood. So, there should be, I think someone mentioned how back in the civil rights time movement that they actually had classes, took the demonstrators through classes on how to respond when the police attacked and how to respond when they did certain things, so that it could not be said that you as the protester was the one being violent or even going to respond in violence. And so there has not been that class, and I think there's just a a season where, you know, it's not real clear. You know, some people are not real sure what the motive is with the Occupy situations across the country. And so because of that, I think sometimes, like I said, I just think the police may get a little overzealous in their desire to, you know, maintain law and order, and then also follow, you know, whatever guidelines they've been given. So we got to know that the police aren't just making these decisions up when they come into work. I'm sure there's some person in high authority that's making that decision, go down there and move the people, you know. And so it's the police only doing their job, and so we have to be real careful not to put all of our hatred or anger or hostility toward the police officers, but what part of the system is pushing those officers to respond that way?
What I would like to know, though, is that why would they even be doing that? Why would they try to say that these people can't come down here and protest? Why would they be so involved with being so physical with these people? We're going to take a call, and hopefully we can get some answers here. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Last 4-3-2-3-1. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and you have a comment or a question.
I have a comment. I'm Roland Fiola from Simi Valley, California.
Awesome. Welcome to the show.
My comment was, I think the violence, the media is focusing on the violence, but they're not focusing on the message of the protesters, and I think that's taken away from the movement. I would want to get your thoughts on that.
You know, that's interesting. Thank you for your call. Jima, why do you think they're shifting more towards the physical aspects of this as opposed to the actual message of the protest?
Because they have to. Media, I mean, they're controlled by the same group of big business that the very people down on Wall Street and every other street is protesting. And so they have to, you know, they have to give it a certain piece of attention, but they can't come out as if they're in total support because that's their bread and butter, so to speak. So, and I, you know, that was an excellent comment, you know, by the caller that they are focusing in more on, you know, the negative aspects of it. I mean, just like when all of a sudden Bank of America decided, well, it wasn't all of a sudden, because they heard what the people had to say when they decided not to go with that $5 transaction fee using your debit card. Well, that comes as a direct result of this movement. And you would think that that would have gotten a lot more attention this week around, you know, how this movement and how this Occupy has had a direct impact. It had a direct impact on the decision that Bank of America had made, as well as Wells Fargo and Chase. You know, they changed their minds based on what the people in the street were saying. And you would have thought that would have gotten a little bit more attention, but it didn't. So I agree with the caller that the media is putting a lot more emphasis on the negatives that is happening. But I think that's because, you know, on a small scale, they have to report the news, but they can't slant it one way or another because they're part of that very big business that the protesters are out there protesting.
To me, though, that when the Tea Party movement started, and I'm not going to say it started a couple of years ago when President Obama, and there are records to say that it started a long time ago, but the national attention the Tea Party was getting and the message that they were portraying about the Tea Party and taxes and things of that nature seemed to get more traction than all of the physical aspects of bringing guns and doing all this and Hitler stuff. I mean, their message got out more so than the Occupy Wall Street. What do you say to that?
Think and it's unfortunate because it did get out. I mean, it did not report enough, in my opinion, about some of the hatred and the anger that was coming out of those Tea Party rallies. But it focused on, you know, they were whatever the whole tax enough already, whatever that means. But when it started, nobody had been in office long enough to even be talking about taxes. So what were they talking about? You know, for them to try to make it seem like it was about that as opposed to it being a direct reflection of this president coming into office, that in itself is a joke, and that's a lie. And the media did a great job, once again, of covering it up. of making it be about something that it was not. And so it's unfortunate that it had to go down as it did, but the media played a huge part in giving the Tea Party all of this notoriety with all the crazy people they had on TV talking. And then you fast forward that a year and a half to the November last year elections and all those people that came in during the midterms and how much you've seen them on television talking the nonsense they've been talking. It's unbelievable. It's hard to find a person in the House of Representatives that talk with some sense or even talk that represents me. Everybody that they have on there, they don't represent me. I don't even know how they're considered to be part of it. So I think the media had a huge part to do with the growth of the Tea Party, quote-unquote, movement. And I think they've had a huge part to do with the lack of, in terms of support, that Occupy Wall Street has gotten. But the beauty of it is that those people believe in what they're doing, and they are moving on. Whether another media person comes down there or not, I believe that these people have decided we are standing for something this time, and we're going to make you show us on television.
And that's why I really like the nature of the movement, because we talked about it for several weeks now, the fact that the mainstream media would say that there's no goal, there's no vision, there's no objective. But I said that's the beauty of this movement, because they have the flexibility to kind of do and be who they want to be when they want to be, as opposed to being shaped or being transformed based on what an ideology of a big stream, a mainstream media. So I really, I'm really excited about this, and I think, and I really believe that they had a tremendous influence on our society. You gave an example with Bank of America, but I want to extend that to the Run on the Banks movement. In fact, this was called Bank Transfer Day. I think this is kind of it was born out of the Occupy movement, the Run on the Banks, and I think these are similar type of deals that will happen from this point forward. I think that this will begin to grow, especially if there's more violence against the people. More people will join in and say, enough is enough. You're not going to treat us in this fashion. And they're going to begin to do these little small things like these bank transfer days. So were you involved in the bank transfer day, Jima?
I was not, but I do plan on opening up an account at a community bank and or credit union. I do.
Well, why do you think that's so important? Why is people really get people to move their money out of banks?
Well, the banks haven't been honest. They haven't been truthful. They make it difficult to get homes, even if you're a small business, if you're trying to buy a home. They have all these stipulations, and they're just hard to work with. But, you know, they took the biggest bailout in history, and they have failed to take care of the community and failed to take care of the taxpayers that allow for that bailout to happen. So for, you know, your smaller bank, you get to know those people, and your smaller banks are community-oriented. They want the communities to thrive. And so I think that's why people are more amenable to going to a smaller bank, because the big banks have failed us. I mean, and so if they fail, it won't bother us, because our money ain't there anyway.
I was getting ready to write a blog post about the very idea of the parents of this generation that's treating so many people like this, the baby boomers, in fact. And the blog article was going along the lines of your mama taught you better, right? Because the fact of the matter is that their parents, the baby boomer parents, made it so much better for them than it was for their parents. And so now the baby boomers generation has that same opportunity to provide for the next generation of four, but they've become to be more greedy. They become to be more selfish. And so some specific examples of that is that I remember when I was little and my mom used to go to the corner store, and in the spirit of this, you know, in the spirit of having this localized bank, we had these localized stores where you would go, and if she didn't have all the money at the time, she would be able to get the food on credit, or she would be able to get some, you know, going down to get our Christmas toys on credit. And it was a relationship that was established between the retailer in the community and the people of the community. And that relationship grew over year and year and in time. And so, but now when you expand that and you look forward at the banks, and how you can't go down to your local bank and say, hey, you know, I'm having a hard time, I lost my job, and I just need a couple of months before I can make a payment, or I'm going to make partial payments. They're so big at dumping fees on you, or they're so big at trying to take your home, and it's really gotten into this mess. So, Jim, what happened to the generation that is causing all of this problem?
Well, on the short end, and probably the most simple way I could say it, is that, you know, they just got drunk on their own wine, which you should never get drunk on your own wine. And they began to value things over people. They begin to value profit over people. And because of that, and you talk about your mom, and, you know, I grew up in the same type of environment. I remember going down to Mr. Joe's store and getting, you know, saying, this is it, she needs such and such, and he'd give it to me. I didn't have the money, you know, and I did it, and that was that, and went on back home to the house. So I think they fell in love with profit, and that whole attitude of, I want more for my family than my family was able to provide for me. And in that, I think we forgot some of the basic values of who we are as people. And we've talked about this before. Some of those things that sustained us, we don't do anymore. We talked about life and family life and how we don't sit down to dinner at the same time. We don't have everybody comes in the kitchen and fix whatever they want to fix. Everybody got a TV in their own room and a phone, and so we're so disconnected from one another. And I think that has a lot to do with it. When you begin to value, you know, profit over people, you lose that thing that was once taught to you about how to take care of your fellow man, you know. And we are a nation that's supposedly built on Christian principles, and yet we fail daily to meet the most basic needs of our children. When you look at the poverty numbers that just came out this week and how many people are in poverty, one in five children, one in six children are in poverty, and we're the richest nation in the world, are you serious? That is unacceptable. And all of it is in line with what you just stated, is that, you know you were taught better than that. You know you were. And so you've not only failed you, but you failed your parents.
That's exactly where I was going. The fact that I know they know better because they were treated better, they were provided for. And so now this greed has really permeated our society in so many different ways that it's destroying at the core. You know, I was talking about early on about the earthquake that happened in Oklahoma, and the fact that, you know, that's just another symptom of, not saying that the people in Oklahoma are bad, but it's just an example of how rotten this society has become at the core. And our core is just falling apart and breaking all over the United States. I mean, we're having earthquakes and all these type of events. You know, of course, people can attribute it to global warming and so other things. But the reality is our society is built on these Christian principles, and we're not following them. And we're falling apart at the core because of it. And it is really, really sad state of affairs if we continue to move down this particular path. Now, I mentioned a few moments ago about Bank Transfer Day. Now, Bank Transfer Day was, of course, yesterday. And it was more than 82,000 people RSVP to the movement on Facebook. Now, the principle behind monthly debit card fees were something that I could support as a conscious consumer. I could not, in fact. And so, therefore, I was considering, and still is considering, doing that. Now, Jimmy, you mentioned before about some of the banks were prohibiting people from withdrawing their money out of the banks. What is that all about?
That was the craziest thing I think I've seen in a long time. The Bank of America, and there were several people in different, you know, parts of the country on the whole Wall Street thing were trying to get into Bank of America to close their account, and the Bank of America people had the security not let the people in to close out their accounts. That is, how can you do that and still be open for business? That's what I couldn't understand. I'm like, is that not illegal? Is it not I mean, I don't know, but they were not allowing the people to come into the bank to close out their account. So that was interesting to me, very, very interesting to me.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to move to this next segment. I want to talk a little bit about Oprah's Life Class. Now, Jima's been religiously attending this Oprah's Life Class, and she's been learning a lot of things. I'm going to have her share some of the things. We're going to have a little dialogue exchange about some of the things that took place. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Point.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So for the last couple of minutes, we've been talking about the social consciousness of the United States, I want to say. And I kind of mentioned the fact that the baby boomers' parents did a whole lot for them, and the fact that during this time, they were able to grow as far as wealth is concerned, so they were doing a whole lot better than, of course, their parents did. But when you roll the clock forward or you look at today, at our society today, our generation is not doing, on record, as better than the generation before us in a lot of cases. You have a lot of cases where the kids are now coming back home. You have a lot of cases where you go to college and you get a college education. There are no jobs available because all the jobs are shipped overseas. The jobs were shipped overseas because of the low wages or low labor they could get away with. So there are a lot of different instances where the generation of the baby boomers is not doing what their parents did. And in fact, there are many reports on this. And so I was glad when I heard Jima talk about this whole life class thing, because it seems like to me that Oprah has put together a class, and a lot of things she talks about is kind of a touchy-feely, you know, improve myself arena. And so some of the things that Jima has been talking about over the last couple of weeks is how she's able to grow by taking this class. Now, I'm going to have her talk a little bit more about the class and about how she got involved in the class and everything like that. But I want to first say that Oprah, as she left her show, she started doing more things online. And so last week we talked about her class. And so what I was speaking about successful people. Now, after 25 years on Oprah TV, Oprah Winfrey says she's having a time of her life on the web. Now, the 57-year-old mogul is connecting with viewers through her weekly webcast and says it's the most fun she's ever had. Now, Winfrey's live webcast discussions about her new show, Oprah's Life Class, have been so popular, they've been added to the lineup of the Oprah Winfrey Network. Life Class premiered earlier this month and features Winfrey sharing her favorite interviews and insights from her long-running talk show. Now, on Fridays, she discusses Life Class lessons during an hour-long webcast with a live audience and invites viewers to comment or ask questions in person or through Facebook, Twitter, and Skype. And, of course, you've heard Reverend Al talk about Jima. Yeah, this is our very own Jima that he's talking about there. And there are other people that in the blogosphere and in the Twittersphere, if you will, that Jima is always engaged in, and they have dialogue all the time about many things. She's really plugged in and engaged. Here's another opportunity for her to be plugged into Oprah. And so she's been attending this class, and she's been bringing those little nuggets that she's learned over the past couple of weeks, and she shares them with us. So we're going to have her do another one today. Jima, let's talk about the latest Oprah class.
Well, on Friday, her class is usually on joy of rising and what are those things that bring you joy. Earlier in the week, she had a class on thinking outside of the box and just living outside of your box. And there was a lady on there who, for most of her life, had just been dealing with her weight, and she was never really overweight, but in her mind, she was. And so everything about her was consumed about one diet or another. And so it wasn't just herself that was consumed, and she made her husband and children that way as well. So she finally decided, I'm tired. I'm tired of living like this. I'm tired of not feeling like I'm good enough. I'm tired of feeling as though my weight is holding me back. And she made a conscious decision to just let it all go and release herself and to go outside of her box. And she really went out of her box. She did something that most of us would never do, is that she took a run around her neighborhood in a bikini. And she said, I'm free, from all of it. Here it is and all of my guts and glory. I am okay just as I am. And when you take a look at those moments where you have been trying to break out and trying to find your space, you sometimes have to remind yourself that you are okay just as you are. And on Friday's class, there was a young man who actually Skyped in from Israel, and he was talking about how he doesn't feel as though he matters to the universe, to the world, to where he is. And although he's in the field in which he was working in, he works with disabled children, mentally disabled and physically disabled. And what Oprah and Iyanla said to him was, you do matter. And the best way to pick up on what you can offer is to be of service to someone else. And I find, as you were just talking a moment ago about where we are generationally, we have forgotten how to serve, and yet we all want to be served. And if we get back to serving one another, what we find is if we are all serving, then we all would be served. And it seems so simple, but it's something that we forget about. And so the lessons this week were just about, really, for me, it was around some self-discovery, really making the point to be present at the moment that I'm present right now. And that's difficult when you're married and you got children and you're trying to be who all you can be to them
and not lose who you are in the process. And women, we often do lose who we are in the process because we have a something guilt just kicks in and makes us not want to do so much for ourselves, but we do so much outside of ourselves for so many other people. And when we finally decide to give ourselves permission, what we find is that people around us are just waiting on us to do it. It's not as though anybody was ever holding us back. We would really, but we thought they were. And so it really talks about, you know, finding that place and finding that place where you can find your joy. And it's all about finding joy and not happiness, but finding joy, those things. And one of the assignments this week was, what are the things that bring you joy? And I responded, you know, and that one of the, you know, things that brings me the most joy is my son. And that when I see him, it doesn't matter what my day has been, or even when I think about him, there's a sense of peace that comes over me because I know that, you know, A, he's dependent on me, but I know he loves me with all of my issues, with all of my flaws, but also with all those good things about me, too. I know he loves me. And so when we talk about moving from where you are to going to the next level or just to the next place, you know, being free is something that was resonating this week.
I like that, and especially when you talked about the difference between happiness and joy, right? Because there's a very clear distinction between the two. Because it seems like to me these external things make you happy, but those internal things make you joyful, brings you joy. So talk about a little bit about the difference and how you define happiness over joy.
Well, it's just what you stated. I mean, you know, I think it was Kurt Franklin that said in one of his songs that, you know, happiness is connected to what is happening, and it's not necessarily about what's happening, because even in the midst of complete, total chaos, you might can still find some joy in that situation. If you've lost all, you've lost your home and everything, but you're still alive, there's some joy there. So it's not just about the things that you have, because you could not have anything and still have some joy. And so you have to know that it's not about the external, as you stated, but it's really about, you know, those things on the inside of you, those things that are that you really can't put a price tag on, those things that you value more than you would value your life. Those are the things that brings you joy or should bring you joy. I mean, because all the things we have could be taken away by some natural disaster. But if I'm still here, then that means that for me personally, that my God had something more left for me to do, and he wasn't ready for me to go away with all the things. So that, you know, gives me a sense of joy.
And so when I look at all of the things that are going on around us with the Occupy Wall Street, with the record number of unemployment, with the jobs that have been shipped overseas, and quite frankly, people need to finally realize this, that they're not coming back, right? Those same jobs that were shipped overseas are gone. They will be gone forever because they're jobs that can be outsourced that are low wages, right? And so there is no incentive for anybody over here to create those jobs here, so it won't happen. And when we look at the fact that, you know, the people are in the street, you know, day in and day out, upset about our community. It seems like to me that Oprah has provided an outlet, if you will, to be able to say, let me decompress. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about the issues that we all know that we're facing, but let's find solitude in this time when we get together. So have you, Jima, have you been able to find that solitude in the midst of all of this chaos by attending this class?
I have, and I think what it's forcing me to do personally is forcing me to stop making excuses about why I haven't done some of the things that have been near and dear to my heart. And so it's forcing me, once you write something down, for me, I'm now held accountable to it. And so when I look at some of the answers to the questions that are there every night for the life class, and I'm writing down my answers. I'm like, wow, you've got to do something with this now. When I listen to the stories of people saying I thought I couldn't, or I was afraid of what, you know, would happen if I didn't succeed, I have those same thoughts. I have those same feelings. And so I have to now look at Jima and say, okay, so if you continue doing what you're doing, you know you can do that. If you decide to go outside of your box and do something different, the worst thing that happened is that you end up back where you are, which is okay because you know how to do that. And that really resonated with me when they were having that dialogue, and that I think it is allowing me to accept the things about me that I like, figure out a plan to address the things that I don't like, but either way, embrace who I am in my totality and be okay with who I am and not allow someone else to define me, but to define myself.
Now, many of our listeners out there hear week in and week out about you and Reverend Al. They hear about other people that, you know, that you're engaged in now that you're attending Oprah's class. And people may think this is too out of and too far for them. It may be out of their reach. Can you kind of define for the people out there, the listeners out there, hey, how you got involved in this, and how easy or how difficult for them to get engaged today?
Well, when you talk about wanting, I am a news junkie. I didn't realize that until recently, probably till I stopped working, working for somebody. I'm always working, but I didn't realize that I was so engaged in politics. I didn't realize it. I really didn't. I know anybody listening that knows me, you're like, Jima, you've always been the way. But I didn't realize that I knew it like I know it, and how I'm intrigued by how the mind works, and that's always been something I've been excited about. In my field, I've often dealt with people going through a change, what we call a change process. And when you're going through a change process, there's two layers of that. You're either going to go through do those things to be compliant, or you're going to make some changes that are going to be internal to really help you get to the next level. And so when we talk about this process, I like knowledge because I know it's the one thing that I have that you can never take away from me. So when I talk about, I don't know how I got this way. I just am. I'm just involved and engaged in what's going on in the world because I feel like I'm here for a reason. And if you don't listen to anybody else, maybe you'll listen to me, and maybe I'll say something that will resonate with you, that will get you to move. So I feel like I have a job to do. I feel like I'm obligated to find out as much as I can and to be a good steward of this opportunity that we have doing this radio show. I mean, I can't come on and give you all this advice about, you know, doing things outside of yourself, and I never do anything outside of myself. So I have to be a part of that process. And so when I looked at, when I saw online that Oprah was doing this class, I was like, okay, I can do this. And then I was like, man, I'm not going to be able to commit to that every night. You know, just have too many things going on. But then when I realized I could go back and watch the classes online, I was like, okay, I can do that because I can do that during the day while I'm doing something else or at night. And so I just kind of forced myself to see, look at the topics and see what I liked, what I didn't like, what I felt I could learn something from, and just began to participate. But I really found it to be almost like my own self-therapy, so to speak, in terms of recognizing where I am but still recognizing that, you know, there's a few other things I want to get done. And how can I do those in the way that's going to bring me peace and yet also bring me some success?
So how is it then that the listeners out there can get involved themselves? I mean, they obviously listening to you is making me more curious, intrigued about participating. You know, if I had the time, I would definitely, you know, make time if I didn't have the time to try to get engaged in this process. So what is the step-by-step process in order to get involved in this class and ultimately, you know, get all of the great things that you're getting out of it?
Well, you simply go to Oprah.com icon that says Life Class, and you simply just sign up for the class. I believe she has 2 more weeks left. No, actually, I think next week is her last week. And then she'll start back up in January. And in January, what she found out, you know, what she says, when you know better, you do better. And during it, when she first started the class, it was every day, and there was a live podcast at the end every day. Well, you know, viewers wrote in and said, that's just too much. I can't do all that. So she limited the live podcast to just be on Fridays now, which is really good. And it comes on, and then she's even added another step where now not only is it online, the podcast online, but the first hour is also on television. So right after she goes off live on the air with the show, then she comes right back on live with the podcast. Well, the show's not live, but the podcast is live right on TV as well as online. So you can go back online and look at different classes from the previous weeks and sign up that way. And then what she stated come January, when she starts it again, she's only going to have it 1 day a week. I think it's going to be on Friday. But she will have a podcast after that class, and it's only going to be one hour, and then she'll do an hour podcast at the end of that live as well. So I think what she's finding, and I mean, you can really see when people call in and Skype in, and you know, it's very interactive. You're on Facebook, and people are going back and forth at each other. People are encouraging one another. When a young man Skyped in from Israel, it was so many people that told him that night that he mattered and that he was okay just as he was. And that was something that he needed. And you could see him light up. You saw the tears well up because, you know, obviously he hadn't heard it or didn't know how to receive it before. And so this gave him something that he hadn't had. And that's also a healing process. Not just for the person that may have asked the question, but for the person that's hearing the answer, it may, you know, take you to your next, you know, your next phase of healing as well. So just go to Oprah.com, register, click on the icon that says Life Class, register for the class. Like I said, next week is the last week, and it ends on Friday with the live podcast afterwards. And it has just been an awesome, awesome experience.
That's absolutely wonderful, and I thank you for that segment. You know, I'm just hoping that everybody that's out there listening across all 7 continents have an opportunity to get engaged, because you know there is some solitude out of all of this chaos going on, and we have to find it wherever we can in order to make to stay sane, basically. And so for this last segment, I want to talk a little bit about something that's in the news. That, Jima, this is something that's also an area of your expertise. Now, there was a report that James Causey compares the cost of 1 year at Princeton University with housing a prisoner at New Jersey State Prison, determining that the prison costs more. He says it's time for the nation to develop an alternative to incarceration because it can no longer afford to house prisoners indefinitely. Now, 1 year at Princeton University is about $37,000. 1 year to house a prisoner at New Jersey State Prison is $44,000. Now, an inmate is not leaving prison in 4 years for a job on Wall Street. He told in his Sunday column that the price of college is pricing too many young people out of the market. We have some college graduates who have accumulated $90,000 worth of debt from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Now, from 1987 to 2007, the cost of higher education has gone up 21%, while the price of correction spending has shot up a staggering 127% during the same time. This nation can no longer afford the lock them up and throw away the key approach. We have to come up with ways to keep people out of prisons in the first place, and it starts at birth. We have to start putting young people on the pathway to success. Schools have to do a better job of getting kids the help they need early on. Jima, now, first of all, I want you to tell the listening audience about a little bit about your background, and then I want you to comment on this particular piece.
Okay, my background is in juvenile justice. I've been in that field since 1992, and I've worked with juveniles that have been incarcerated for crimes against people and property, ranging from drugs to rape to murder. And I've worked with both girls and boys. I've also worked in the system where in detention, where kids are waiting to go to trial and are waiting to go to placement, waiting to go to where they're going to be serving out their time. So this is definitely a subject that is near and dear to my heart when you talk about taking care of children from the beginning. And as a nation, we have failed to do that miserably, which is why we have so many of our young boys and girls being incarcerated.
What's interesting to me in this whole particular piece is the fact that a lot of times when we talk about the prison or the cradle-to-prison pipeline, or when we talk about incarceration, especially when it comes to minorities, we always talk about the social aspects of it. But here is being the case made, or the case is being made, to talk about the economic impact. Now, because it's been a capitalistic society, and the fact that money makes people awaken people more often than, you know, your social issues or the fact that they're not doing well in school. So, can this be a catalyst for change, especially when you're talking about the financial impact of it?
Well, I would agree with that if the people that were listening wasn't making more profit off of it. I mean, the fact of the matter is those people, you got to remember that number is also spearheaded by the fact that a lot of our institutions are now privately owned. So when you're privately owned, you are about making profit. So your goal is to have more people in there. The more you have, the more money you can charge for them to be there. And so therein is where, you know, the rubber is meeting the road. So those people that have those private prisons in their communities, back in their states, these representatives, they're not going to be too excited about cutting down population, because I'm sure that that's bringing some sort of benefit to that community. The sad part of the matter is that we have this referendum, this law, this whatever it is going on down there in Mississippi, where they're debating, you know, when a person starts, and it's their vote is whether it starts at the moment of conception. And my concern is that we as in the government and we the people, we have placed so much emphasis on what happens at the moment of conception, and yet we don't spend enough time what happens at the moment of delivery. Because if we were to spend the same amount of time talking about the delivery, then we would do better in taking care of our children. We bring them into this. We say we want everybody to have every child that they ever conceive, and yet we bring them into a world that's full of poverty. And then we end up incarcerating those that are ridden the most by poverty, because those are the statistics. It's those that are, you know, kids that come from lower income homes, and kids that you know, minority children are the ones that are most incarcerated, and that has a direct reflection on our level of kids in poverty. So how can we talk about being concerned about children and all of that, and we allow them to be born in such horrible, horrible conditions? So if they really wanted to do something about it, and I think I stated this a couple of weeks ago, we have to do a much better job around prevention, true prevention, and as opposed to made-up prevention. And we don't do that. And so those people that are making the money off of these penal institutions, because, like I said, a lot of states have gone private in terms of they have, you know, the state may own the building, but everything in there is private. You know, the workers, everybody works for a private company, and that private company is all about profit. And so when that happens, they're not as concerned about, you know, making sure things are done just and fair. They just want to keep their beds full because they're making so much money per head off of each person that's incarcerated. And when you look at juveniles,
it's the same thing. A lot of state agencies have turned that care over to private institutions. And so it's the same thing when you look at the amount we spend to educate. And this came out in somebody's study. I want to say it was the NAACP study we talked about a couple of months ago. When you talk about the what it costs to educate as opposed to what it costs to incarcerate, it pales in comparison. So we've had the data for years, but the people that are making the decisions aren't concerned with that data, excuse me, because I think they're making some profit on the back end of that.
Let's talk about us as parents. I mean, we have some culpability in this. I mean, the fact that we understand, because it's years and decades of data that support this, that if we don't educate our children, then it is impossible to keep them out of prison. And so we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to take another call at this time, and hopefully we can get an answer. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from, and do you have a comment or a question? Last 4, 2900.
Yeah, this is Shahid. I'm calling from Fort Worth.
Okay. Welcome to the show, Shahid.
Thank you.
You have a comment on
this? Well, I don't have a real comment on it. I mean, as far as the incarceration situation, I think, because I wanted to make another comment on something else, but I'll briefly at least say this much. Much of that it has to do with, and you kind of hit on it already, education, the lack of quality education, the lack of when I say quality education, I mean actually people in communities being schools that not just have the background but also have the concern to actually raise the level of awareness of those young people in that community. There's a lot of people in education institutions just getting a paycheck, and that's from the teacher up to the principal, up to the superintendent, even to the people in the state that's making the actual rules or statutes that govern and regulate educational institutions in the various 50 states. Many of these people are just concerned with money, and their financial retirement funds, okay? So that's going to obviously lead to people that's going to come out of high school that have lacking the proper knowledge, skills, and then you're going to wind up having people that are going to have children who are going to also pick up these ways, or I wouldn't say traditions, but environmental habits, that's going to lack the motivation to gain such skills, and then it's going to be a self-perpetuating situation. So you're going to end up with basically people who think that the only way they can survive is to make a quick dollar, turn a quick buck, and that's going to lead to possibly some criminal behavior. The judicial system, or the judicial system, pardon me, is already stacked against them, because you got, again, people that don't really care. The more people I can send to jail, the more money I can make. And there's recent studies that judges are pretty much paid in bulk, at least on the state level. That's in all the 50 states. So here you have this situation. And I guess I don't have an answer. Well, there is an answer. I think one of the answers is what you see the people on Occupy Wall Street is doing. The reality is that there's a slow growing revolution in America that's taking place, and most black people are missing the revolution. The revolution that they talked about and hollered about for years, and let me tell you, I'm in my middle 50s, so I grew up in the revolutionary era where, you know, I had an opportunity to actually see Black Panther activity, SNCC activity, Nation of Islam activity, and the like. So I have not just experience, I have a history of being a part of that and also observing that. So this same kind of revolution that people have been waiting on is happening right now, slowly, although it's not a black thing, it's an American thing. But I think the young people, with their desire and motivation to bring about a change and not to be controlled by corporate or political interests, is a good thing for the United States. And from that, eventually there will be people who have legitimate concerns that will be more interested in correcting these situations, such as we see in the prison institution and as well as in the educational institutions. So that's a short spin on that. I don't know if that's of any help or not, but that's just my observation on
the
situation.
Saeed, you hit on so many great points. And I want to talk about one in particular that you talked about missing the revolution. You know, it's not and you said that it's not a black thing, it's an American thing, which I think is even better because it's now, you can't spin it one way or the other. You know, it's this unification of Americans saying that we need to do this thing. So my question to you is, though, since you were able to witness the Black Panther movement and all those things you talked about, and you're now able to witness the Occupy Wall Street movement, I want to ask you, what do you think is missing? What's missing that more people can't get engaged and to take this thing to the next level?
Well, the thing is missing is it's pretty much it's not, I wouldn't say anything missing. I think there's not really, from my observations and my actual communication with the Occupy Wall Street movement. Okay, it's not like I'm just on the outside looking in. I mean, I'm kind of in it, looking in and communicating as well. And you have a lot of different young people, which, being a teacher at one time, I always knew that young people would eventually save this country, or at least they're going to make an impact on this country sooner or later. But you have a lot of young people, and even middle-aged people out there as well. You'd be surprised. There's some people out there that are 45 years old. They work. They work. They take turns. Some of them go out there for so many days. They don't work on each other. They go back to work, and some of them people take off from their job. They go out there to work. You got people that have their own businesses that are also out there. You'll be shocked how many people are out there that are actually working, not just unemployed. In fact, I think it's about, the statistics that I gather, it's about 40-something percent of the people that's in these movements across America that are actually employed right now, okay? So, but it's a big, they're trying to bring together concepts out of frustration and to eventually come up with an agenda that can be a universal voice, because the voice really basically right now is kind of sporadic, although it has one resonance. You know, we're tired of Wall Street buying politicians. We're tired of Wall Street influencing elections. The Supreme Court ruling, I think it was early this year, that corporations are actually persons. I don't know how they came to that, which makes me think now the Supreme Court is also paid in Balfour. But in any event, you see those things that are coming together. So the thing that's missing is people, particularly black people, are not aware of really what's going on because the media is really not coming from that point of view. They've done this thing so long that if it's not a black thing, it ain't my problem. It's the white man's problem or the white boy's problem.
Yeah,
but it
yeah,
is your
right.
problem. You see what I'm saying? You know, if it ain't got to do with no job, that ain't my problem. And we're only concerned with the black. Anything that's happening in America right now is a black man's problem, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of white folks are on food stamps, just like it is black people on food stamps. And many people have now come to the conclusion that, hey, you know, it might not be your fault, but it is your problem, and we all in the same boat. So I think one of the things that's not coming across is not enough people are really – again, the message about really what's going on and why it's going on, because like you said earlier in the program, the media really hasn't been covering that much. When they did start covering, they start covering some of the negative aspects of it, and that kind of, you know, people look at sensationalism and media, whatever, the hot thing today, you know, Kim Kardashian got divorced. I mean, it's whatever the hype, that's what people chew on. So if it's going to be a riot or something like that, or somebody got hurt or somebody got shot, then there's a problem. Like a lot of problems, people probably don't know that the kid out in Oakland who was a Marine vet, he's in critical condition because he was out there. A lot of Marines were out there in the Occupy Wall Street movement, and this young man got shot in the head by a canister. Now, they say tear gas cannon. They say that's not the case now, but, I mean, it's, the doctors say he was clearly hit by an object, and the Oakland police are now denying it. Maybe it was their people or whatever. There's an internal investigation. But the point is, there's a lot of people that are involved with it, and that you didn't probably hear that much about the guy getting shot on TV too much about that in Oakland. You didn't hear about the Marine and the brother in New York City that stood down the whole NYPD police force about 2 weeks ago when they was out there beating up the people in Wall Street. It was a Marine, an African-American. They walked out in the middle of about 200 or 300 policemen and stood them down and allowed those people who were being beaten up to be helped by the other people and taken to safety. You didn't hear about this, but this, that's because I'm saying this kind of information is not, you know, being put out in the media, and particularly, you know, you don't hear about it on our spaces in the black community. Just like I wanted to ask you a question, and maybe you talked about it on your show, but I think most people, you need to ask them a question: are they aware of the emergency shutdown is going to occur Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time? See, most people don't know about that. FEMA, and you can go to the FEMA website, FEMA and the Homeland Security are going to shut down all national communications at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday to do an emergency alert test. There will be no TV, no radio, and some people say possibly no phone service, although we're not sure about that, for 3.5 minutes. Now, most people, have you heard this on TV? No. But they're supposed to be running this on TV. That's what FEMA said on their website. Now, I see it on TV, 3 o'clock in the morning. They showed a little thing that just on Wednesday, November 9th, at 1 o'clock Central Standard Time, which is this time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, they're going to be running this test. But if you don't hear that during a regular television program. I have not heard it on any radio station, black or white. None of the media people are saying anything about a newspaper. They may say something about it Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning. But there is a national emergency test that's going to be, hell, they're telling everybody don't freak out. But when your TV screen go out and your radio go out, possibly your internet go out, and a lot of the police departments and first alert people are a bit concerned because they're like, are we going to have communications while this is going on? So unless you know about this test, it's going to shine across the screen. This is an emergency alert, but they're not going to tell you it's a test.
Well, you know, along those lines, I'm looking at the FEMA's website right now, and it says a nationwide test of the emergency alert system will take place Wednesday, November the 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, as a part of our ongoing efforts to keep our country and community safe during emergencies, we're working in partnership with the Federal Communication Commission, FCC, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, to conduct the first nationwide test of the emergency alert system. Now, the EAS test plays a key role in ensuring the nation is prepared for any type of hazard and that the U.S. public can receive critical and vital information should it be ever needed. That's awesome that you would do that right here on this show. I really appreciate that. We will make sure that we get the word out through all of our blogs and through all of our social media outlets. Thanks to you, Shahid.
No problem. I just thought you need to know that. The television people are not saying nothing about it. I heard recently as of last night that because of, see, a lot of the intel communities, because of they getting the word out, they said that they might change it to only a 30-second test, but then the, it's like, well, okay, but then it might go as long as 20 minutes. We don't know. And see, the only problem we have as Americans is if all this goes out, we don't know what is going on during this time period. And,
right.
You know, if people are not aware of it, they said they're working with the local authorities, but you just yourself said you hadn't heard nothing about it, and you haven't seen it on TV. You haven't heard it on your radio. I haven't heard it. So why come the local authorities are not talking about it? Okay, now this comes on the TV. You sit up there watching television, you listen to the radio, then your radio goes blank and says, this is an emergency alert, and that's all you hear. Well, what emergency alert is going on, you know? They're not going to say this is a test. They're not going to say that. They're just going to say it's an emergency alert. So I don't want people to be, you know, tripping, and particularly black people, thinking the end of the world is coming. So, you know, no, seriously, I mean, these are the things that media, information, you know, we have to stay on top of and make these people be upfront and forthcoming with us. You know, again, money people manage this stuff now, control this. You know, the only power that people have within themselves. And it's one of the things I heard one of the founding fathers say a long time ago, it doesn't matter how big a country gets. It doesn't matter how big a military they have. It doesn't matter how much money individual companies or individuals are made in their coffers. The power always lies at the foot of the people. Don't ever forget that. If the people say no, it's no. And if you have a passion to even maybe even give your life for that, no one can take that from you. That's how countries change. It's always at the foot of the people. All the people have to do is say, we are not paying any more high taxes. You're going to have to put all 300 million of us in jail. You either change the system or you just go broke because I ain't paying you nothing. Every little money I get, I'm putting in my pocket. If 300 million people say that, it will change. But
you know,
it's always at the people.
And I believe that's what we're seeing today. I you know, before so for so many years, it has people have had the false notion that it's been the money that's really moved the way we do things in our society. But people are starting to find out, no, it really is the people that can do that. And so that is why I think we're seeing this Occupy Wall Street movement gain so much traction. And Shahid, again, it's been an honor and a privilege to even have you call and talk to such to so many of the great things you've been talking about. And I appreciate that.
And I'm going to get off this phone. I appreciate you giving me your time. And I'm going to listen to the rest of your show. But do spread that information.
We'll do that. Jimo.
Began to really take a hardcore look at the power that we do have individually as well as collectively, I think we'll begin to see, as you say, that some things change. I mean, we've seen some incremental things change just in the time that Occupy Wall Street has been in effect. And I think if we recognize that things happen in small changes and we are vigilant in terms of reminding people about if we just look back at the Montgomery bus boycott and how it started on one day in one year and ended 370 some odd days later. So and that was just the boycott. It wasn't as though the law changed immediately. And so we've got to recognize that the change is going to take some time. but we cannot give up on the fight. And we have to recognize we all have a part to play. I agree that this revolution that is going on, we need to be a part of it, because we will be impacted by whatever the decisions are that are made. When they make laws, they don't make laws for black people and white people. And the laws will have an impact on all of us. And so we have got to stand up and take note of what's happening. Get out of the fog that we're in. Get out of the funk that we're in. Wake up and realize that there's something in the water, and it is brewing. And if we're not careful, we will find ourselves without some of the very rights that we so care about today. We won't have them, because we will have slept through the election. And we will allow them to take those voices and take our voices and away from us.
What's interesting is the fact that over the last several decades, you know, it has been the African American that's initiated a lot of the things because of voting rights, because of civil rights, because of a lot of different things that we were not afforded the opportunities. And now it seems like, as Aida has put it, you know, we're kind of sitting on the sidelines in a lot of cases. So I hope this begin to be the beginning of a period in which we would get engaged, and more importantly, not get engaged because it's a black thing, not get engaged because it's a white thing, but get engaged because it's an American thing, because we want these American changes collectively, not just for black and white. And so this is a great opportunity for us to get together and do things together as an American, as opposed to being black and white. Your thoughts, Jima?
I totally agree with that. And as we began to bring this session to a close, one of the things I want to go on record, and again, this week, is to challenge all of us as we look at what's happening in this political climate, as we take a look at what's going on overseas across the different lands. You know, it's interesting that we're going to have some sort of emergency preparedness that will happen across the country. What in the world is that about? You know, what's going to happen? You know, what could happen to all of us at the exact same time that we would need to have some emergency preparedness for? That's kind of scary. We'll have to talk about that next week. But that's a little scary for me. It brings up so many of these end of the world movies that we were talking about earlier. You know, so I'm having to do a little bit more research on that one myself. But be aware, you know, we've been given some information. Patrick just read it. Go out to FEMA's website yourself. Take a look at it. Spread the word. So when your TV cut off in the middle of Perry Mason, because that's what I would be watching at 1 o'clock. When my TV cuts off in the middle of Perry Mason, I won't be calling, you know, Patrick at work talking about the TV just cut off. I'll have some ideas to what's happening. But also, as we close, is that just a reminder, my challenge to us all is to ensure that anybody in your household, anybody in your family, anybody on your neighborhood, at your job, at your church, wherever you see people, please make sure that they are registered to vote, that they have the right documentation for voting. We know there's been a lot of states, 39 of them, that are changing their voting rights identification laws. And so we want to make sure that we're not waiting until the last minute to make sure we have what we need come time to vote. There are a lot of local things that are happening across the country. I know right here in my city of Sacksey, we had some early voting going on for Dallas County that ends on Tuesday. So I'll be going to the voting booths on Tuesday. And so just make sure that you are participating in those local elections. What's going on your child's school board? That's something else we'll be talking about as this year continues, is we'll be talking about local school boards and how do they have an impact on our child's education. So, I mean, I'm curious about that as well. So, but my challenge, please go out, make sure you're registered, make sure your family is registered, and find out if there's a way you can do some registering. You know, what does it take? Get your church involved. We're not concerned about who you vote. We just want to make sure that your vote is counted. So that is my challenge once again as we close out today.
Okay. Well, I have one more thing I want to talk about, Jimmy, real quick. And this is specifically regarding what's going on in sports. Now, the lockout. So give me your take on what's happening with the latest on the lockout.
Well, the latest on the lockout, I heard,
I've heard is that the line in the sand has been drawn. The owners are stuck on 50-50. If anything, they will go where they'll get 53% and then the players will get 47%, which I don't think that's going to work at all. I heard also reading the article from, I can't think of his name right now, Jason Whitlock, I think it was Jason Whitlock, made a statement that in his article about Michael Jordan as being one of the owners. He is one of the owners that is pushing for the rest of the owners to hold the line on that 50-50. So that's interesting coming from a former player that he would kind of go, you know, against the players, but I guess now he's an owner, so his allegiance is to the owners. So that's just interesting how that's going to play out. But I'm somewhat pleased with some of the attitudes of the players. You know, they're ready to take whatever hit they have to take for things to be done fair and for things for them not to feel like they're being owned by this team and by this organization. So they are beginning to recognize their power. I just hope that they can stay fast and stay strong and not have some of the big names sell them out like what happened you know, years ago with Michael Jordan and Patrick Ewing. So I just hope that that they all stick it out, and because we love basketball, and we talked about who's making all the money. We know they all making some money, but you know we would love to see basketball happen this season. But it right now, I don't see that it's gonna. I don't see it happening. Definitely not by Christmas.
All righty. Well, I would like to remind people that. In a couple of weeks, and from this point forward, we're going to be doing a thing called church announcements. So if you have a nonprofit organization or some community event that's going on, give us a call. Contact us at pcook@tailormade101.com, and what we're going to do is give you some free advertisement and to put you out there on our blogs and make sure that people know about what's going on in the community. You know, a lot of cases, there are scholarships that will be given away. There are times when food baskets are being given out. And even when people have problems in their homes or, you know, perhaps a fire or something like that or death in the family and they need some support, get us the information. Let's get more people engaged and more people involved and get the word out. We have this social media outlet. It's interesting to me that a movement like the bus boycott was able to get so much traction without cell phones and Twitters and Facebook accounts. And so we should take advantage of this opportunity in social media to be able to get the word out. And we at Current Events is going to do that. So make sure that if you have anything going on in your community you want to get the word about, word out, give us a call. Contact us. Again, that's at pcook@tailormade101.com. We'll make sure we get that information out. Well, that's our show for today. Again, I would like to thank PushGapRadios.com. Man, I had a great time with those group of people. I tell you, they're a dynamic group, and I tell you, it won't be long before you hear a lot from them. I guarantee it. Also, thanks to my caller from California and Shaheed for giving us that great information. And then all of you that are listening all across the 7 continents and across the world, we really appreciate you joining in. Of course, I'd like to thank my co-host, Jima. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. And don't forget, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. And don't forget to bookmark our site. And that's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Now, until next time, remember, written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, George.